थर्टींथ चैप्टर क्षेत्र क्षेत्रज्ञ विभाग योग हैवी वर्ड्स वी डोंट हियर देम यूजली क्षेत्र क्षेत्रज्ञ देन विभाग एंड देन योग सो थर्टींथ चैप्टर हाउ डिड वी कम टू दिस थर्टींथ चैप्टर वी कंप्लीटेड द ट्वेल्थ सो इट मेक्स ए लॉजिकल सेंस to come to the 13th. But what is the need of this chapter? What did we hear in the 12th chapter that Bhagwan is trying to link up to this 13th chapter? What did he not tell in the 12th chapter? What new thing is he going to tell in the 13th chapter? And then what is this Kshetra? And then what is this Kshetrajna? So let's try to link up the whole loose ends and see how did we land on the 13th chapter. 13th, of course, is the last set of chapters in the 18 chapters, 666. And we know one of the great Mahavakyas of Vedanta is Tat Tvamasi, that thou art. First six chapters are about the Jiva, when Arjuna is asking his question. And Bhagwan is answering his question. So that is the Jiva part. That is the you. Second set of six chapters is Bhagwan is talking about his glory. So that is that. And the last set of six chapters is Aikya. Asi. You are that. Unification of that and you. This is how Pandit Madhusudan Saraswati ji has described as the whole 18 chapters in sets of three each. So when Arjuna is asking his question with the delusion when he is in the middle of the war, it was not that he never had fought a battle before. He had fought multiple battles. The problem arose when he saw his own relatives, when he saw his own gurus, when he saw his own teachers standing in front. And that's where the problem was. Let's understand this for ourselves. It's a big world. A lot of things are going on. We don't care. Things are related to us. It matters. 9/11 happened. A tragedy that changed the landscape of the whole world. We feel sorry about it. We feel about it. If we did not get affected personally, if nobody died in that tragedy, it doesn't make that connect. If I'm a surgeon, I'm doing surgeries left and right, no problem. When my own child is in an accident and I have to operate on my own child, my hands are going to tremble. So it is with this idea of me and mine, mama and aham, is when we start having a problem. Because we are attached. And this attachment is the bondage. So to get out of that is the message of Gita. So the first purusharth, the first effort by us, by an individual, is the karma yoga. Do the karma, dedicate the results to the Lord. So that's the first step. It's not that there is a camp somewhere, I'm going to undertake a trip to South Africa or somewhere in Africa to feed and serve the undernourished and underprivileged people. But when I come back to my own home, I start giving orders. No, that doesn't work. So it's a service means a service. Everywhere. And then the karma yoga leads to karma sannyasa and then dhyanam or the meditation in the sixth chapter. The second set of Gita, starting from chapter 7 to 12. So in the seventh chapter, Lord talks about the higher nature and the lower nature, the para prakriti and the upara prakriti, and we'll talk about that. The lower nature is the five elements, the space, air, fire, water, and earth. And then the three, man, buddhi, ahankar, eight. So these eight are the lower nature or the lower prakriti. And then the jiva, which is a higher prakriti. And he talked about this in brief in the seventh chapter. We'll look at this in slightly more detail. And then in the ninth chapter, he throws a googly. I am in all. All are in me. I am not in them. They are not in me. So Arjuna is confused. Lord, what are you talking about? Please explain. I mean, how do I know you? Okay. Then in 10th chapter, Bhagavan says, I am the best among the best. I am the Mount Everest. I am the Himalayas in mountains. I am Mount Everest in the tallest peaks. I am the lion in animals. I am Garuda in the bird, among the birds. So I am the best among the birds. Arjuna is even more confused. Bhagavan, but how do I see you? I need to see you. Then Bhagavan shows him his Vishwarupa form, the universal form, where Arjuna is actually able to see with the divine eyes his universal form, where he can see the past, the present, the future. He can see all the beings going inside his mouth. There is no time. There is no space. And that's when Arjuna understands that all there is a consciousness. There is no jiva. The absolute consciousness is all there is. There is no separate jiva. Jiva, after all, is consciousness with the conditioning of body, mind, intellect in the field of object, emotions, and thought, being a perceiver, being a feeler, and being a thinker. So if we take the conditioning away from the consciousness, all that remains is consciousness. So as it is by itself, there is no separate jiva. There cannot be a jiva. So that's the 11th chapter. And then in the 12th chapter, the devotee, Bhagavan talks about the devotee. The devotee understands. And then he is progressing from the Saguna Brahma to the Nirguna Brahma. When we sit, when we do our prayers, we have one Lord. We do our upasana. We do our puja. We do our worship. We do our japa. Gradually, our upasana has to flourish and from ek rupa Ishwar to sarvarupa Ishwar. All the forms of lords are the same. And then to nirguna or formless. That is a very slow progression depending on our individual level. And that's when the devotee loses his individuality, becomes one with the consciousness. There is no hatredness in him. And that's when this link we have to connect. This is where Bhagavan ends the 12th chapter. And to explain that, the losing of individuality, becoming one with the Lord, to explain that, he's explaining the field and the knower of the field. That's the connection of the 12th and the 13th chapter. So Bhagavan is saying that there is no jiva. There cannot be a jiva. Everything that there is me. So when we look at that statement, then there is no transmigration. There cannot be a transmigration because all there is just one jiva, absolute consciousness. And he gives the example of space. Space is the closest to Brahman or Atma because it's the subtlest among the five elements. So he's giving the example of space. So for example, this is all space and we have this room here. So we have created a room space. And then there's some space in our cars outside and then the homes next door. But there's no difference in this space and the space which is inside the other places, the car, the carriage of the train. other buildings. There is absolutely no difference, but there is boundary here. So when parts are created, the space inside the part is not different from the total space. It cannot be. The division is just created by the boundary of the part. But is there really a part there, which is just the clay, Pancha Mahabhuta, which is all the same for all the parts? So if we go to a pot maker's shop, there are different kind of varieties of parts, shapes, colors. Okay, what is that? It's a pot. What is that? That's a pot. What is that? That's a pot. So he's going to get tired. They're all parts. They're all the same. There's no difference. Like we have the electricity here. That is the main conscience. Examples have their limitations, so we have to understand that. So for example, if we take electricity as a consciousness, how does the electricity manifest itself? For a fan, just imagine that we are that. So as a fan, it's going to manifest by rotation of the blades. In a bulb, it's going to give a light. If you're charging a cell phone, that's how that's going to work. So electricity is the same, consciousness is the same, but the manifestation is different, expression is different. Like in this room, this was empty before we came into the room. The room was empty here, the chairs were just sitting. When we came in, like consciousness, the room came alive. That's the same way in us. All this five elements, the consciousness leaves. We're going to fall flat on the ground. So this is what Bhagwan is trying to explain in the 13th chapter of Kshetra and the Kshetrajna, the field and the knower. And we'll talk about that also. So in the first verse, Arjuna is asking these questions. The Purusha, the Prakriti, the Kshetra, the Kshetrajna, the Jnanam and the Gnayam. Heavy words. We usually don't hear these words. So in those times, and again this verse we talked, it's usually not in there in most of the Gita textbooks. Again, it is attributed to a great scholar, as Anilji mentioned last time, Pandit Madhusudan Saraswati ji. He brought in this verse so that we understand how Bhagwan is starting, because when we start the second verse, which is the second verse, which is actually the first verse, we'll understand that how to make this connection. We're going to have a hard time understanding that. So Arjuna is asking all these questions: what is Prakriti, what is Purush, what is Jnanam, Jnayam, Kshetra, Kshetrajna. So in those days, when they were children, they were growing up and they were getting their traditional education with archery and whatnot. And Bhishma Pitama was in charge of their education, overall education. So he wanted them to have a bigger perspective, and he wanted them to have some spiritual knowledge also. So whichever master was passing through Hastinapur or the capital at that time, they used to invite and they used to talk to the children and give sermons. And unlike us, there are a lot of speakers come and they talked to the disciples, and a lot of times they talk in a language that just goes above our head, bounces off, doesn't hit the heart. Same thing happened there also. So like here, we have a hard time understanding sometimes, when the speaker is not making a connection with the heart of the student, that everything is, or most of the things are going to bounce off our head or just go over the top. How to understand that? Same thing happened with the children also over there. And now, here, Arjuna had the opportunity. He had Bhagwan all by himself in no man's land, in the middle of the field. And he was not afraid to ask any questions, because Bhagwan was right there in front of him, and he could ask him whatever, with whatever time he needed to. So he asked all these tough questions, all these technical words. And we saw this, Anilji explained, Purusha and Prakriti. And the Prakriti, Prakriti or matter. How do we define matter? What is matter? Last time we saw, matter is body, mass, intellect, and then the objects, emotions, and thoughts. Okay, that is matter. But then how do you define it? What is the definition of matter? Jada. We're going to be scratching our heads. How do we define? How does it matter if you don't know the definition of matter? It does matter. this is matter, this is matter, everything is matter. But how do we define us? Define the matter as? Matter or jad is which does not know itself, cannot know itself, and cannot know anything else. It's called jad or matter. Totally inert. Does not have the capacity to know itself or others. The spirit is not only knows itself, it is by the spirit that everything is known. The consciousness. So that's the Purush part, the consciousness part. Because if we read the dictionary meaning of Prakriti, it's going to be defined as nature. I mean, okay, nature, but then what is meant here? Prakriti. And Gita goes, as Anilji mentioned last time, goes along Sankhya philosophy. But there's a lot of Vedanta hidden here. And just for the sake of those who are interested in, okay, well, what is the Sankhya philosophy, what is mentioned here, in Sankhya Darshan, which was heavily prevalent at that time, Sankhya Darshan or philosophy is, there is only two things, Prakriti, matter, and Purush, spirit, and they are separate. That means God is there separate, tatastha, or is only the efficient cause, and the Prakriti, the matter, is separate. Vedanta says God is not only the efficient cause, is also the material cause. So what we see is nothing but the Maya, Mayik, which is dependent on the Brahman or the Absolute Consciousness. Here's where the difference is. So Sankhya, there are two different things, Prakriti and Purush, and God is somewhere and we are here. Vedanta says, Advaita Vedanta says, they are both the same. And it's all because of Maya, which is dependent on the Brahman. So that's where the Sankhya philosophy and Advaita Vedantic philosophy differ. So now he's talking about Kshetra and the Kshetrajna. Again, if we look in the dictionary meaning of Kshetra, Kshetra means field, farmland. And Kshetrajna, well, knower of the field, which is a farmer. Right? But then it becomes hard to understand these feelings. That's the way we have to, you know, listen to the teacher and understand what they're meaning, what they're trying to tell us. So, Kshetra is the field, which is everything that we see, and including our body, which is a field. And the Kshetrajna is the knower of that field. And then he's going to talk about that also in detail from the second, this verse onwards. So we'll read the second verse.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Idam Shariram Kaunteya, Kshetram Mityabhidhiyate, Etadyo veti tam prahuhu, prahuhu, Kshetrajna iti tadvidaha, Idam shariram kaunteya, Kshetram mityabhidhiyate, Etadyo veti tam prahuhu, Kshetrajna iti tadvidaha.
Idam shariram kaunteya. O kaunteya, O son of Kunti, idam shariram. This is the body. This is what Bhagavan is trying to say. This body. O son of Kunti, Arjuna, this is this body. Kshetram ityabhidhiyate. Abhidhiyate means referred to as Kshetra or the field. So, he Kaunteya, hey Arjuna, this body is referred as a field. Tadvidaha, those who are well versed in, those who are the wise men, prahuhu, call tam, that veti etad, who yo veti etad, means who knows or who is aware of Kshetrajna or the consciousness. So those who are well versed, those who are the wise men, they call that which knows the field, which is aware of the field, as the consciousness or the Kshetrajna. Let's parse this stanza. It is very, very interesting. I had no idea, but when I read this in detail, see, Kshetra is the objective sense, the active sense, the field, the objects that we see, the trees, cars, people, you know, anything. That's the objectiveness, that we see them as objective. And abhidhiyate is referred to as, is the passive sense. So here, Bhagwan is saying, Kshetra, the objects in the active sense, abhidhiyate, being referred to as, this is the passive sense. It's like, I have gone, I have eaten, I have seen. These are the passive versus the active. I ate, I go, I see. So that's the active. But why is Bhagwan saying this in this passive meaning here? By this, he connotates the witnesshood of the consciousness. He's separating this. See, the name is Vibhaga Yoga, right? Vibhaga, division. So he's trying to create a distinction between what is witnessed and who is the witness. So right then and there, he is already creating a division. What is seen and who is seeing? Right then and there. See, this last set of 6 chapters, the 13th, 14th and 15th, they're highly Vedantic chapters. And technically, it is said that Gita ends at 15 chapters. The knowledge part is done with. So what do we hear in 16th, 17th and 18th chapters? These are some of the qualities and virtues that Bhagwan is trying to tell the student, that, and he's expecting the student to cultivate those ideas, virtues and values. Otherwise, like, listening is good, reading is very good, but the problem that happens to us is when we are trying to own it. That is where our biggest challenge is. We can read as much as we want, we can listen as much as we want, but when it comes to owning it, that is the biggest challenge for a seeker. So if we have not made that effort, we are shortchanging our own self, nobody else. Nobody, it's for nobody, it's for us. So if we have not done that, we are shortchanging our human birth. And in a few places it is said, then for Bhagwan Shankaracharya mentions that that individual is like an animal without a tail and a horn. So we don't want to be that. So we don't want to waste our human birth by not owning that. Otherwise, we can learn the verses. That person can be a good speaker. He can give good talks, wear clothes, whatever, doesn't matter. But as long as the owning part has not happened, it has not done the job. There's somewhere something is lacking in my own effort. But how do we own it? Where do we develop this faith? We don't get it in once. We don't get the faith in Safeway. Where do we get it? How do we get it? So there was a gentleman who asked his teacher that, I'm having a big problem in my business. So can you help me with that? So he said, okay, yeah, go to that pilgrimage, you know, go to Tirupati, and Bhagwan is going to, you know, fulfill your wishes. So he goes. Few months pass by, so then he comes back to his teacher, says, well, nothing has happened. I don't think he's listening to me. Okay, well, how are you going? Well, I'm going in my car. Nope, can't do that. Why don't you walk? So he goes walking. Few months pass by, nothing happens. He comes back to his teacher. Oh, teacher, nothing has happened. Well, what were you doing? I was walking and huffing and panting. And no. You have to take Lord's name. Govinda, 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 when you're doing that, when you're walking. So he does that. So some more time passes by. When he's doing that, Govinda, 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 the devotion came, his mind got quietened, and with the quietening of the mind, his concentration and other faculties improved, and he was able to put them to proper use in his own business, and his business flourished. And he attributed that to the fact that he was taking Lord's name. Oh, then he came, comes back to the teacher, says, "You are right. He has listened to me." See the connection here. So faith is not we're going to go somewhere and pick it up from the shelf and bring it home. We have to develop it by total nishtha and total bhakti and total devotion. So here Bhagavan is mentioning that in the passive sense, the witnesshood of the consciousness. And this body, which is referred to as the field of this consciousness and everything else, imagining ourselves, for example, we are sitting in this room and we are looking through this window, everything outside, trees, birds, sky, cars. So that is the field. The window, the aperture, is our mind and intellect. And the consciousness, the kshetragna, is inside. So we are just watching everything outside. That's what Bhagavan is trying to tell us. And for this body, which is the field, this is where we experience all of our past actions and deeds and karmas. They're going to fructify here. Somebody has good health. They're a result of good punya karmas that this person has done in the past. Good car, good house. We see this quite often in society, that this person, you know, he has it easy. We don't think he is working that hard. But how come he has it so easy and I'm working very hard and it's not working out for me? It's because of our account in the past has been like that. The more good actions, good karmas we have done, the more sukham this field is going to give us. And when the account runs out, like I think IBM used to be a very big company in the past, now it's Google and Apple. So the account runs out, so we have to go through that dip. It's a roller coaster ride. Once we are on it, we are on it. We have to go through it. Ups and downs, ups and downs, ups and downs. We cannot step out of the speeding roller coaster. So we are reaping what we have sown in the past. So this body is the actual covering. It's protecting us, the internal organs. So that's one meaning of the kshetra. The second meaning which is attributed here is kshaya. The body is constantly going on through damages. It's decaying, getting old. Balvihar, after summer when we come, we shave, nice clothes, makeup, trying to stay young, look young. Other people, friends, oh, how are you? Look, you're looking young. Nothing has happened to you. What do you do? And that person or our own kid runs, oh my God, the kid has gotten so old. That is telling us we have gotten old. So putting all that extra coating doesn't matter. So that's the second one, the kshaya. Then the third is the sharanat, or cultivating. This is where we cultivate all of our past actions, whatever we have done, whatever we have, you know, thought of, or all the actions. So that's the third aspect of the body. So that's what he is saying in the passive sense, attributing the witnesshood to the consciousness, that hey Arjun, those people who are well-versed, and there's one more beautiful thing here, tad vidaha, those who are well-versed, those who are the wise men, means Bhagavan himself is not taking the credit here. I didn't say that. Bhagavan is armed. I never said it. It's there in the scriptures. It's there in the Vedas, which are the revelations of the rishis and the seers and the munis. They have had those revelations. It's there. I'm not taking the credit for that. It's there already. So such a beautiful thing Bhagavan is saying, that it is there, it's already known fact, that this body is a field, and the knower of this field is the absolute consciousness, the Kshetrajna. So that's the nutshell meaning of this verse. Some thoughts which may be germinating, questions. Yes. The Kshetra is the body, mind, intellect, and objects, emotions, and thoughts. So it does include all the desires and all the vasanas and everything.
Awesome.
Yes. Yes. And in the second verse, which is going to be a bigger blow, is going to give a shocking treatment. Bhagavan is going to give us a very shocking treatment. And actually, once we understand the second verse, end of Gita for us. This is very, very shocking. I consider coming to the ashram here as Bhagavan's Gurudev's clinic. We are all mental patients. So here we get shock treatments. But please take it lightly. Don't take it seriously. This is my own thing. And he gives shock treatments, and we are all different. We all need different amount of shock treatments and different voltage, I guess. Easier way to understand this is like outside our cars, our trees, everything that we see through the window is the BMI, the body. And mind and intellect are the aperture. And we are right behind it. The perceiver, feeler, thinker part is behind us. That is the Kshetrajna. That is the reflected consciousness, or that is the Jiva. Which is the Jiva, which is the reflected consciousness. So absolute consciousness is, you know how Swami Ishwarananda Ji was here and he explained it to us, like there's sun and then there are buckets. In all the buckets, the reflection of the sun is there. So that's the reflection, the reflected consciousness. Absolute consciousness is even higher. And depending on the waves, depending on the amount of filth or dirt we have in the buckets, the reflection will be there. And then everything comes after it. So that is still the Jiva. The absolute is even beyond that. And then in the second verse, he is going to tell how to differentiate this even further.
Om Purnamadam Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Krupyo Namaha. Harihi Om.